the Johnson Wax Program. The makers of Johnson's Wax, Johnson's self-polishing glow coat, and Johnson's Carnu present the brilliant conductor-composer of melody ranging from symphony to swing, Meredith Wilson, and MGM's noted young commentator star and teller of amazing tales, John Nesbitt. And your show, the words of the storyteller and the tunes of the music maker, blended together in a special Wilson-Nesbitt formula for easy entertainment and a new kind of program in the weeks to come. And here to explain things is John Nesbitt.
Thank you very much. Thank you and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. For several years, Meredith Wilson and I have been discussing just such a program as the one you're about to hear. No formality, no fanfares, and no hoopla, just as if we were having a musical party in your own home, heaven help you, and doing the numbers that we'd be afraid to do in public. And here we are, orchestra, arrangers, singers, right in your living room and set to start. Meredith Wilson bustles in and, beaming with fatherly pride, is about to introduce one of the finest orchestras in the nation. Meredith.
Thank you and good evening, everyone. I'm very happy to introduce our orchestra, ladies and gentlemen, but first I want you to meet Bob Carroll.
Somebody stole my gal.
And our little feminine singer.
Somebody stole my pal.
That was Connie Haynes. Now the violins with a little Paganini, please. And a dash of the bumblebee. And the brass and possibly a touch of Beethoven. You can say that again. The bass department with a spot of the second rhapsody. And our pianist in a splash of Liszt. Pardon?
Something wrong with it. It's too highbrow.
Highbrow? Highbrow? Not at all, John. We'll simply play 20 of these famous classics, one after the other.
Oh, heavens, Meredith. We'll be here till August.
Something of the kind. We'll play all of them in less than 2 minutes. And just to keep from being, as you say, highbrow, we'll play at the same time Somebody Stole My Gal.
Amazing, my dear Wilson.
Quick, Watson, the baton.
Incredible. 20 classic composers all turning over in their graves at once. What a picture. I clocked you, by the way, at 1 minute, 45 seconds. And here is a new department dedicated to lost music. A number of years ago, Ted Shapiro, the songwriter, hit upon one of the most beautiful melodies he had ever composed. He was employed by Sophie Tucker at the time, and as her pianist, he had to use his new melody as a background, while Sophie wowed the audience with her monologues, and nobody ever paid any attention to the new tune. But it's now 1939, Shapiro has won success, and a picture studio has ordered a new love song from him. He pulls his beautiful melody out of the files and starts to shape it into a popular song. He works all night at his home in Hollywood. At 4 in the morning, it begins to work out. By the next afternoon, it's going great. He jumps into a cab, rushes to the studio, and there he plays it for the producer and musical director, and these gentlemen go into a kind of dance of joy and triumph. Best number in years, sure to be a hit. A week later, a 50-piece orchestra records it on film for a super special movie. $20,000 were spent in its production. The picture is finished, cut, and previewed, and then they discover it is too long by a reel and a half. Something must go, and onto the floor of the cutting room went this song, the one that should have been a hit, but never had a chance. It was called A Handful of Stars.
Thank you.
have it. And that is the first nomination for our Lost Music Department, A Handful of Stars. After this playing tonight, it might yet become one of the hits of 1942. You know, one of the oddest things we do on radio programs is the way we start to grow mysterious when we come to the sponsor's advertisement. You know, there is a crash of music, a multitude of sound effects, excited screams from the dramatic cast, the orchestra plays like mad, and while everybody's wondering what it's all about, the announcer is swung into the microphone and a boom, the commercial in his hand disguised as a hot communique from headquarters. And at long last, he's able to begin. But if you've listened to Fibber McGee and Molly, you know that the products Harlow Wilcox describes are of actual significant value in this period of national conservation, and they need no excuses whatever. Harlow.
You know, there's one thing I've noticed since I started to cut down on my driving. Whenever I do have to use the car now, I enjoy it more than I used to. I think that's partly because I take better care of the car than I did. Not only the battery and tires, but the finish, too. You know, it's so easy to keep your car new-looking with Johnson's Car New, the modern polish that does two things at once, both cleans and polishes in one application. You don't have to work all afternoon to give your car a showroom shine, not with Car New. This remarkable polish is a liquid. You apply, let it dry, wipe it off. Then when your car sparkles like new again, you can give the finish added protection and save on car washing by applying a coat of Johnson's Auto Wax or the regular Johnson's Wax. Try this easy way of taking better care of your car's paint job with Johnson's Car New, spelled C-A-R-N-U.
One of the best ways to run across a great human story today is to watch the news very closely. When Mexico declared war recently, for example, out in Hollywood, we all began searching for a story about our new war partner of the South. And we did find many a wonderful true story that we'd never known about before. And although this one will soon appear as one of my own passing parade pictures, I should like to give you a pre-showing of it here. The story of a giant who lived south of the Rio Grande. It is 10 o'clock at night. We are standing in an enormous room in a marble palace in Mexico City. We are soldiers and politicians. We have guns in our hands. We're watching a tiny little man who sits at a desk staring at a piece of paper. The little man is president of Mexico. The piece of paper is his promise to run away, admit that he's made mistakes. We wrote that paper for him, we, the soldiers and politicians. And all he has to do is sign it, and we'll let him go to some other country, take his wife and family with him, have money, peace, and comfort to the end of his life. All he has to do is sign his name. Of course, if he doesn't sign, there are men with loaded rifles waiting outside, and they know what to do. But the little man doesn't even pick up the pen. He just smiles, stands up, and goes out of this great marble room, out of the marble palace, out into the black night over Mexico, and so we shoot him down like a wild animal. Why should we remember all of this? It happened almost 30 years ago. Yet it had a great deal to do with the fact that we of the United States are not fighting alone today. You see, the little man was Francisco Madero, president of Mexico. And it's a curious story. Madero was a gentleman, owner of estates larger than many American cities, one of the rich men of the world. But one day, it is said, he was attending a fashionable stag party when one of his host's servants, a peon, made a mistake. And so he was struck in the face and the peon struck back. And so they shot him on the spot. Rich little Madero, who had hundreds of peons himself, had perhaps never troubled to think about them as human beings before. But this thing disturbed him. That night he couldn't sleep. And when he rose in the morning, he had caught a fatal sickness. A disease of the heart that sometimes leads men to glory, sometimes to the firing squad, and sometimes to a cross. In the following month, a mysterious change came over Mexico.
came over Mexico. Poor men were heard singing in the fields. Poor men walking proudly to their work. And when the presidential elections fell due that year, every old-fashioned landowner in Mexico was horrified to learn that Francisco Madero was leading the poor, had given up most of his wealth, and was the people's candidate for president. It was as if an earthquake crashed over Mexico. The dictator threw Madero in prison. He escaped. He came to the United States, where he knew we would help him, and we did. A people's army rose up in Mexico throughout the dictator, and within 6 weeks, little Madero was president of his country. And with the tears streaming down his face, he promised a chance for everyone. He would make Mexico a true democracy before all the world. Poor Francisco Madero, he might have known what would happen. But he believed, you see, in everyone. He wanted the landowners to share their opportunities with the poor, but he didn't want to force them the way a dictator would. He wanted to do his job decently and legally and gradually. So his enemies had time to act. They corrupted the army, they captured Mexico City, and on that night almost 30 years ago, they closed in. Oh, yes. They gave him the chance to run away. Madero chose this. Fill a man full of bullets and you're through with him forever. Forever? No, you're not. You see, before Madero's heart stopped beating, he whispered some words that no roar of gunfire can ever quite drown out. I must do this. I must do this. If I run away, my people will lose faith in the cause of the freedom of all men. They will lose faith in the great tomorrow of my country. They must not forget that is all that matters. For 30 years, that whisper has gone through Mexico. And it is actually one of the chief reasons that Mexico joins us in our raging battle for freedom today. Francisco Madero, a little man, 5 feet 2 inches tall, but one of the great giants of the passing parade. Meredith Wilson has heard our America singing all of his life. Sad tunes and cheerful tunes, sentimental tunes, magnificent hymns and tinkling little ditties and immortal ballads. So Meredith has become a collector of these songs. And tonight he opens his library to us all in a whole group of them. Here they are, utterly different kinds of tunes, with Bob and Connie Haynes and the orchestra. But they all have one thing in common, these tunes. An American memory is locked up in every song.
Please encourage me with just a word or two. Do, do, do. You needn't say you love me, for I'm pretty sure you don't. but tell me that you like me, and there's nothing that I won't be glad to do. You, honestly and true, I go along. For you, I do a wrong. For you, because I'm awfully strong for you.
10 musical nominations for the folk songs of tomorrow. Now, I have an announcement to make, but first, Harlow Wilcox.
You spend a lot of time in your kitchen, don't you? And you like it to be not only convenient, but cheerful. I think a good many women would use Johnson's self-polishing glow coat on their linoleum floors if it did nothing but make them sparkle with cheerful beauty. You know, of course, that's only one of the things glow coat does for you. Think of the hours of labor it saves, because glow coat needs no rubbing or buffing. Think how it has done away with laborious and destructive floor scrubbing. And remember that glow coat actually makes linoleum last 6 to 10 times longer than if it were unprotected. In these days of conservation, that's a mighty important matter, don't you think? Try Johnson's Glow Coat on your linoleum floors, won't you? It's self-polishing.
Ladies and gentlemen, from every radio program, from every picture screen, wherever you go these days, you are hearing the voice of your nation calling out to you for aid. Turn 10% of your income into bonds every week, every month. Whether it is hard for us or easy, 10% of our salary in war bonds means that we want our children to inherit a world worth living in. Time is up, so until with Meredith Wilson, we join you again a week from tonight. This is John Nesbitt bidding a very good evening to you all.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson Wax Finishes for the home and industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This program has reached you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
This is Chicago, WMAQ.